It's Thursday, October 29th, 2015, and welcome to episode 182 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, a show about teaching and learning with technology. And this month is going to be video conferencing month for us, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit of everything, but a lot of connecting with other people in the profession all over the place.
A lot of connections all over the world and literally globally. We now have within our capability, so easy to do a video conference now. We'll talk about some of the different things that we've been doing this month, and we've been doing several different things. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and of course, we'll have our technology picks of the week.
We will. So we're, you know, kind of walking the walk as we're talking the talk here.
That's right. So stay tuned, and here we go. Up first today, I thought we would spend a few minutes talking about something that's really starting to become a routine part of business, and that's about video conferencing, webinars, and just sharing professional development and things online through all these technology-enabled resources that we now have available to us.
It is, because it's really opening gateways to people. I mean, we can talk to people all over the country. We don't have those limitations to who we can reach out to, or we don't have to wait for an annual conference.
Right.
And just once a year get that. Now it's like all of a sudden it's available all the time.
Right.
And if you can't be there live, it's usually available, you know, by recordings, which is pretty cool.
Right. And it's become ubiquitous enough that it's common enough that we can set these meetings up, and it's no longer what I would call a production. It's like we need to make a special event. We can kind of do these ad hoc things. And that's what I've really experienced, particularly this month. It's kind of been video conferencing / webinar month. I know last time we talked, you just had yesterday, I believe, you had a webinar with the Library of Congress. So how did that go?
It went great. I was, you know, a little bit of anxiety because it was a new platform for me in that. But, I mean, it really, and the people that, to attend a live event, you had to register in advance.
Right.
And that, because they used Adobe Connect. And then to watch the recordings, you don't have to do it. And most of them filled. They set a cap at, like, 200.
Mm-hmm.
And they filled. So obviously people are interested in this. Now, not everybody shows up. A lot
right.
of people register and think maybe they'll be there, maybe not. But still, the fact that it even fills blew my mind. I had no idea that many people were, you know, looking at things like that for opportunities.
Yeah, and this was your first experience in kind of
it
presenting
was.
In this method. And you talked last time about doing the chat windows and things.
Yeah.
Were you able to multitask and kind of do that and talk? And
I was. I was really nervous about that because I like the facial expressions and I like the give and take with my live classes and live mm-hmm. presentations. And so I was really concerned about how my, and you know, I like to make little jokes and say things, and it's like, okay, I probably shouldn't do that because I'm not going to get any response, and it's just going to be silence on the other side.
Right.
And
so it was just kind of more of a lecture one-way transmission. Did you have a moderator that kind of?
No, it was just me talking the whole time, and but I did ask questions, and people were awesome. I mean, they typed
in the chat window.
They typed in their answers and put them, and some people, you know, just boom and put it out there. Other people, I think about it a little more and edit, you know, what they're writing and that. But it was the speed, you know, was instantaneously. I mean, it was awesome because I immediately got responses to the questions I was asking. They were talking amongst themselves mm-hmm. in the chat, which was really cool.
And can be distracting.
And that, well, I you know, we're multitaskers. That's what we do as teachers. So it was okay. So I didn't look at that. I tried not to look and all of that. But the only technical difficulty we had at all was completely on my end because I had some new headphones that had a mic on them. Didn't realize until afterwards there was a little thing
mute,
if you pushed
button.
On it was the mute mic, and so we started and they couldn't hear me, and so I uninstalled or you know left the room, came back, all of that, and then later finally I just unplugged it and went through the mic in my monitor, which was perfectly fine. But then later in the evening I looked and I'm like, oh, there's a button on the side.
Yeah, it's one of those rapid prototyping things yeah. to kind of go through the, those lessons learned, you know, once you go through it.
Absolutely. So it's like, okay, now I know if I ever do that again and that. But it was cool. And then, like, you know, the library tweeted a couple of the things that I said and tagged me in them, and then other people retweeted them. And that was neat to see it spreading.
Yeah.
Like that as well.
That's what I like about like Twitter and professional learning networks and things. There's a lot to be said for serendipity, just coming across something that you're interested in. So you'll occasionally see out, somebody will tweet out, you know, currently having a Google Hangout or whatever it might be. And then you can literally just click and within seconds be there. Now, yours required a registration, so, you know, you had to sign up in advance to do that. Do the participants get a link to the recording?
I don't know.
Or will the recording be open to the world?
I think the recording will be open to the world. And the reason you had to register was there were PD credits. You got a 1 hour credit for attending the whole thing, and so that's why you had to register, because then they have your email and they can get back to you and tell you how to get that certificate. So I'm guessing if you weren't doing something like that, you might not even need them to register. I don't know.
Yeah, we've been kind of, like I said, this is really we've hit a critical mass where this is really, like I said, it's not become a big deal. It's kind of becoming part of a everyday workflow, learning flow type thing that we have these capabilities. So the word is spreading, the technology's become reliable enough and easy enough, and as I said, widespread, that it's becoming very easy to do. And last month on our podcast, I don't know if you remember, but we were talking a little bit, about serendipity and paying attention to something. I mentioned South America.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just so happens that on Twitter, I got an invitation. I had come across a new hashtag to me. It's been around, I guess, probably for a while, but I just happened to see a hashtag called Podcast PD, Podcast Professional Development.
Mm-hmm.
So podcasting is kind of one of those things that kind of comes and goes in fashion. And right now I'm seeing a lot in education about how teachers, you know, are using it more and more. And I love it for the time shifting, because, you know, you have, if you register for something, you have to be there from, you know, 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m., whatever, on such and such day. But I was contacted by someone in my professional learning network, and this person happened to be from Bogota, Colombia, in South America. So just coincidence, you know, from last time.
Yep.
So they invited me on to do a Google Hangout. And they had several teachers, and it was they're doing a series of recordings where they're interviewing people, with video conferencing software, and recording it for their teachers for professional development. So I thought that was a really neat way, you know, to take advantage and use the technology. And because they were using Google Hangouts, it was being recorded and it's posted out there on YouTube. So I'll post a link out there, and I'll post a link to yours if it's available out there in the show notes.
I think the recordings are going to be available next week. There were two nights of them, and they started at 3 Central Time and went to 7, I believe. And that, so there were 4 hour blocks, 2 sessions each block, and that for both nights, and then 1 keynote that started the whole thing off. But it's one of those two that sometimes you want to be part of the live action of it, and you want to engage, and I like that. I like being able to chat, respond, you know, put responses in, and I like seeing the slides moving with that.
Well,
And that, but I mean, the recordings are nice to have too for later.
Right. But from a teaching learning perspective, professional development perspective, those are things that we have to think about as teachers.
Sure.
You know, how do we have that interaction and things? And as you mentioned, sometimes it feels like you're just talking to a blank wall because you don't have, you know, the face-to-face feedback out there. But there are ways to go out there and simulate, you know, some of that interaction and things. And then that chat windows is a great way to do it. And then if you're just doing like this Google Hangout, there was a group of teachers down there so they could each ask questions and things and have that interaction. And like I said, it's becoming so common. I like the time shifting piece of it, but the geography's irrelevant because, you know, the cameras are good enough now. I mean, way back when, you know, all this started, you know, the size of a postage stamp and everything's blurry and the audio was awful. But today, I mean, you know, high definition is well within the capability as long as you have a strong network connection. So it becomes more of that face-to-face interaction experience for a lot of these.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, one of the things, like, I think, I want to say WebEx. Is that a meeting? Mm-hmm. Okay, we use WebEx a lot with Library of Congress meetings. And it's one of those I always called in. I never went through my computer. I always dialed in with the phone, and then I could mute it or talk or whatever. And that, but then a few of us had a meeting recently, and it ended up just being three of us. And so we decided to hit the video, and we could, all three of us, we could see each other while we were talking. And it was really cool to work on the project in that way and actually see each other. And it just, it was pretty casual. It wasn't a real formal meeting, but it really added to it being able to see each other.
Yeah. We just had another example. One of our elementary classes here had a web conference with NASA about the Mars mission. So they invited a scientist that, you know, currently working on the Mars mission, and invited them in to do, and they had a Q&A session. But they also had the, and I do not like those helping people technically. They had a call-in number, you know, to call in. So what I ended up doing was using my phone, because, you know, we had to have a speaker phone to, to go to the group. So I ended up using my phone and plugged it into a sound amplifier so everybody could hear it. But, you know, that was an hour. That was like an hour call, you know, going through.
I thought you meant your office phone.
No,
it was yourself.
my cell phone. So because we didn't have a conference, you know, speaker phone in that room. So I try, you know, these are just small little barriers. I mean, they've been doing that for years with the conference calls and things. But, you know, an average classroom is not going to have a speaker phone.
Right.
So now, and I, like I said, this critical mass that we've hit, since EIU has Office 365, every faculty, staff, and student has access to Skype. And we're using this common directory. And Skype is over, you know, the last year or so, it used to be called Link, L-Y-N-C, but they've rebranded it Skype for Business, and they've added a lot of functionality. So, and this is something I'm trying to get the word about, every single faculty, staff, and student has this capability to go up and make an ad hoc Skype meeting. So all you need to have is a webcam and a audio speaker, you know, and of course all of our faculty staff have webcams and speakers built into the monitors.
Sure.
So this is a capability that you literally can do. And it's becoming so popular that we've actually got some checkout kits, because not all of our classrooms have computers with webcams and speakers.
True.
So we've got three or four Logitech webcams, USB webcams, that I'm starting to check out on a more routine basis, that anybody wants to do a Skype session. And that actually works out better, because it's on a long cable to plug into USB. So you can put it on a tripod and kind of turn it around, you know, face the classroom, which you can't sometimes do, you know, with the monitor mounted in our podiums. it's working out, you know, really well, becoming more popular. And then another thing, that this has been going on for a few years too, but have you heard of Mystery Skypes?
No.
Mystery Skypes are like a little lesson plan people put together, where one classroom will call another classroom anywhere in the world, and then you kind of guess. It's like, where are you? So I'll provide a link in the show notes, but I've got a little segment here about Mystery Skype and connecting classrooms. I'll play about a minute of this and then explain it just a little bit further.
In my classroom, I'll grasp onto any technology that can expand the kids' possibilities. Greeter, come on up. Learning comes from a teacher that's willing to take a risk and do something new and bring in these powerful tools.
Hi, welcome to Mystery Skype.
One of the key tools we're using right now is Skype to connect with other classrooms. It's so powerful to connect them beyond these four walls.
Are you in the United States?
Mystery Skype's a chance for the kids connect with other students around the world.
Are you east of Mississippi?
Runners of
Mississippi.
No. It's a challenging game for them. They have to critically think.
It helps the kids understand other cultures in other countries.
Are you in the U.S.?
No, we're not.
Are you somewhere in Mexico?
Yes.
It's a powerful tool to see kids learning from each other. Hey, Mateo, come on over, bring those maps. To see their critical thinking process is far better than any test I can give them.
Okay, so that's just a short little snippet. I'll provide a link in the show notes. But you actually go out and assign students in the classroom different roles. So you have like greeters. It's like, you know, welcome mm-hmm. to our classroom. And then it's kind of 20 questions or whatever trying
that's
to figure
very
out
cool.
Where they're at. So, and there's several schools in this area I've seen do a few mystery Skypes and things.
That is so fun.
So they've got some sites and some connections out there for teachers to get together with other teachers. And what I like about it is the you know, geography just kind of goes away.
Right.
The big thing there becomes the time zone issue, because literally you have the globe.
That's true. Yeah.
So you have to kind of plan around, you know,
morning,
what would be
one school, afternoon another.
Right. And... right. And that, you know, that was what was nice about Bogota, Colombia, because that was really the first time that I've made contact down there. But they're actually in the same time zone we are.
Oh, right.
It's almost, you know, not quite due south of us, but it worked out really well.
Nice.
So, and then once you, you know, it's like teaching anything. Once you establish some of those relationships and things, you know, you kind of open a few doors.
Yeah.
Out there. So I had a good time. The hashtag on Twitter was PodcastPD, where I happened to run across that. So. That worked out very well. Okay, so other things with like distance learning and things, we have a learning management system here called Brightspace Desire to Learn.
Yep.
And for years we've had a little plug-in called Illuminate, which is kind of an online classroom type environment, probably very similar to what you did with your Adobe Connect. But, you know, those are the synchronous type things. What I really, you know, what I'm really excited about is we finally have with Office 365 and our directory structure and Skype, and the ability, you know, in any of our classrooms now or offices, just to do this ad hoc. The other development with Skype recently, and this has always been a problem whenever you set up a video conference with somebody. It's like, are we going to do a Google Hangout? Well, if you do a mm-hmm. Google Hangout, everybody has to have a Gmail account.
Right.
Yeah. Are we, you know, are we going to do, you know, Skype? You have to have a Skype account. Mm-hmm. Recently, you can schedule through Outlook in Office 365, basically what I would call a generic meeting, that I can go into Outlook and say meet now, and it'll generate a little generic link, and then I can send that link to somebody via email, and they don't have to have a Skype account or anything. So it's kind of an ad hoc invitation mm-hmm. To this unique link. They would get it, they would click on it, and there is a new web plugin that works with Skype, so they don't actually have to install it. You do have to install the web plugin, or if they have Skype, it will work, you know, with Skype.
Right.
But they click join meeting, and then it asks them what's your nickname, so they can choose, you know, whatever the nickname mm-hmm. is. So it does not require an account to sign in. It just requires this invitational link to go through and do that. And that makes it much easier for some of these ad hoc type things that we're doing. So that's another, you know, barrier that kind of goes away. And that's, you know, like you had to do, you set up some tests and things, you know, and do this. But as people become more and more comfortable with it, I think it's, you know, it's certainly becoming more common.
Can you use Skype on an iPad?
Yeah, there's a Skype app.
Is there?
I haven't tried it with our Office 365 and Skype for Business, but yeah.
Because I know the
same thing
FaceTime.
With, yeah, same thing with FaceTime, but there okay. you have to have an Apple ID, you know.
Right.
And you have to talk with another Apple ID. So.
Right.
And that's the nice thing about with both Skype and Google Hangouts. You can do it, you know, through just a web browser.
Oh, funny. It comes up Skype for Business, formerly Link 2013.
Right.
So,
yeah. They went through some rebranding, so... The other thing is for the Skype for Business client is you can actually record, you can present your desktop, you have a chat window, so it's really becoming like those WebEx type seminars. And what kind of sets it apart is having access to every single person that's part of our university.
Nice.
Because that, you know, the directory structure, usernames and passwords, it's like when you sign up for these services, you have to create a unique
right.
one for that service and for this service and for that service. But now that we have that common directory, it makes it much more feasible.
I'll have to play with that a little bit.
So, like I said, October is kind of been video conferencing, webinar, hangouts, and Skype month. So we're doing a lot more of that. So we thought we'd share some of the things that we're doing with that. For my technology pick of the week this week, I'm going to combine a couple of ideas involving thinking naturally with digital tools. I'm going to provide a link to a YouTube video, and this is a really good video. The other thing that's happened recently is Microsoft has recently announced their new Surface Pro 4 mm-hmm. tablets with the digital ink. And everybody knows I'm a huge fan of digital ink because it allows us to take the analog world, put it into the digital world, and I use it as a thinking tool. So this, if you're interested in anything at all related to, you know, learning theory, using some digital tools, and this one happens to be slanted toward Microsoft and particularly the Surface, but we're seeing more and more of these devices come out because Android supports, you know, Pen, mm-hmm. and the iPad recently, next month, should be coming out with what they're calling the Pencil. So we're starting to see these interfaces become a little bit more popular, and for students and for teachers, particularly teachers that teach in symbolic, science and math languages, you just can't do things with a keyboard, or right. you can't do them easily with a keyboard. So another reason I'm a fan of OneNote with the digital inking, because you can literally freehand whatever you can imagine. So I will provide a link, and I would highly recommend, if you have any interest at all, this has got a lot of learning theory behind it. It's a 46-minute presentation by Travis Smith down in Australia, and it's called Thinking Naturally in the Digital World Seminar. And it's very well done. It's backed by research, and just shows you some of the possibilities. And he actually uses OneNote. So it shows you some of the possibilities of what we can do with our thinking. And one of the big points that Travis makes is going from version 1 to version 2 thinking. Whenever we go from the analog to the digital world, we've kind of been skipping over this thinking phase. It's like we go from, okay, here's a bunch of stuff and here's a digital product.
Right.
But how do we manipulate? How do we learn? How do we think about, getting to that product? And that's why I've been paying a lot of attention to students whenever I do presentations. They almost always have a notepad and ink, pen or pencil yeah. out making those. And I just ask them, it's like, why do you do that? Well, convenience, the free flow of information. Mm-hmm. And, it's just convenient. But once you take that and capture it and put it into a digital world, then other possibilities emerge. So tying this with something that is a specific content area, something that I came across is a website, and it's called Molview, MOLVIEW.org. I'll provide a link in the show notes mm-hmm. to both of these. But it is literally a website, and I believe you have to use Chrome to make this work. But let me see, pull this up here real quick, right here. Mm-hmm. It is a chemistry program. So whenever you're learning chemistry and learning about molecules, you're going from a two-dimensional piece of paper and thinking, this is a three-dimensional model.
Oh, that's cool.
So
very cool.
You've got all these compounds and things that you can work. And I remember learning chemistry for the first time. You draw these stick diagrams.
So, yeah.
And here's a two-dimensional representation, and you're trying to convey to the students what this looks like in 3D. Well, with these powerful 3D modeling tools that we have available, this is a free, free website. You can go out there and manipulate this. And that's where the power of some of these digital tools come in. I'm using my mouse to click, hold, and drag this particular molecule. And then it's got a database. So if I want to go out there and look for, like, sulfuric acid, I can go out there, find it in the database. It will pull up the stick diagram. And then here's a three-dimensional representation of it. So that allows you, as that learner, to play
right.
and manipulate, some of these different things. And with the touch screens and things, you're able to do that with, with a touch interface. You're able to literally come out here and touch. So here's my Surface tablet over here. I'll demonstrate with this one. So I just touch my finger and then pinch and zoom.
Nice.
So you're making these mental models, and you're actually being able to manipulate in real time, turn that around, what's it look on the backside, And it's just another learning tool, but it would be impossible without going to this digital realm.
Right. Now, well, that physical engagement that mm-hmm. just gives kids something to do besides listen, just sit and listen,
right.
to be able to interact with
right.
it.
Right. And every chemistry teacher probably has like a little set of, you know, the little.
Yeah, the models.
I call them tinker toys, you yeah. know, you kind of go through and you have a double bond, a single bond, and the different size of atoms. But whenever you're taking that next leap to true understanding, I mean, that's fine, you know, manipulating some of those models, but there's a lot of information related to a chemical compound. You know, what's the size of the molecule? How, you know, how's it interact? What's the strength of the bonds? So just ran across this free program. If you're a chemistry teacher out there, you probably already know, but if you don't, be sure to check that out, and I'll provide a link in the show notes for that. So those are my two. Be sure to check out that YouTube video, Thinking Naturally in a Digital World, and then also this moleview.org website.
Very cool.
Okay.
Well, mine is something I'm just starting to learn about. I heard about and want to explore a little more. But we've talked about how our students are doing their, well, back in the day when I was in teacher ed, it was called micro teaching, mm-hmm. and you would teach in front of a person holding mm-hmm. a giant camera on a tripod,
right.
and, you know, very. It wasn't authentic. It was very unnatural. And so now, thank goodness, our students are actually teaching in the classroom and then can evaluate themselves, you know, by making a video of it and watching it. And that, but someone was telling me about a product called Swivel, mm-hmm. which actually they can put an iPad or something in. You clip, I don't know what you want to call it, a
tracker.
A tracker, thank you. There you go. Clip a tracker to yourself, and it actually rotates and follows you as you're teaching.
Yeah.
And so instead of just being stuck in the front of the room or doing a video from the very back of the room that, you know, you really just don't get a good feel for what's happening because
right.
it's such a broad and, you know,
right.
far away shot and that. But it's just a neat little tool that this thing moves. You put the iPad or whatever in it, and it rotates and records.
Right.
You know, as you're moving.
It's basically a holder for, like you said, an iPad or your phone or a digital camera. They make
uh-huh.
a separate camera mount for, you know, kind of like it mounted on a tripod. But the little puck or track or whatever,
mm-hmm.
people put that around their neck, and it, you know, it does that motion tracking for you, so you no longer would need a person behind, you know, the tripod if you're doing
right.
pans and zooms and tilts. The other nice thing about the tracker is it's a built-in wireless microphone.
Perfect.
So, you
know, the quality
sound,
of the audio is going to be
yeah,
much
sound,
better.
Sound is so important. And, you know, we don't have one of these. I haven't got any hands-on experience with this. I've looked at it. They're fairly expensive. This one's about $400
right.
and then another $50 for if you want to mount a DSLR camera or something on top of it. But it's a really neat concept, and I think over time, you know, the price will come down a little bit. But, you know, again, for the professional development and things, I could see a use for this in doing some of the Skype sessions and, you know, a Google Hangout or something like that.
Right.
And I wonder how that would work. Probably going to have to be plugged in USB in some way. You know,
for the live feed.
Yeah, for
yeah.
like a live feed. That would, you know. Again, a lot of this is about access and the time shifting of being able to do that.
Yes.
You know, I'd love to have a bunch of these because all of our students are doing their EdTPA videos and things out there. And that's, you know, they basically set it up on a tripod and have a standard shot out there. But this would be neat. But the other issue, particularly for somebody beginning teaching, you know, there's a lot of technical details, and that's why movie crews have 100 people, you
exactly.
know, a sound person and somebody taking care of the video and the scripts and all of that. So it's adding a little bit of complexity, but it's also solving that problem, and it adds a lot more to a video with that movement.
Yes.
You know, we're just so used to seeing, you know, on TV a cut scene like every 5 seconds
right.
or every other second. If you watch, you know, network TV, go home tonight, watch a show, and count how many seconds it stays on one shot. Or how many milliseconds in some case, because
right.
I mean, they are really changing that camera angle all of the time. So yeah, that's a neat one. I would like to get one of those in here and do some testing and things, because I think it would really add a lot for some professional development videos in particular. Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
We'll be right back.
wraps it up for episode 182 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.